Now, earlier this week, the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in on immigration policy, confirming a lower court decision against the Biden administration. The ruling said the Biden administration was wrong in its attempt to end a Trump-era policy of forcing asylum seekers to remain in Mexico while their applications were being processed. The case is significant for immigration policy, and it's another sign of possible changes in the court with three appointments during the Trump administration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts or questions about this Remain in Mexico policy coming back into effect? Big picture, what are you watching for from the U.S. Supreme Court with these three new appointees in the last 4 years? Call 800-642-1234. Rick Sue is professor of law at the University of North Carolina School of Law with expertise in asylum and refugee law, federalism, and immigration law. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back.
Let's start with this Remain in Mexico case. I gave a Cliff's Notes version of what happened there in the setup. Could you give us a little more information about what this means?
Yeah, essentially what it means is that we return back to the Trump-era policy, which was not around in the grand scheme of things for all that long, of sending individuals who are applying for asylum back to Mexico to await their turn in immigration proceedings. In the past, they've been allowed to remain in the United States awaiting those proceedings. And of course, the concern that has been raised is that there's been a lot of allegations and evidence showing that there's abuse of immigrants by criminal elements in Mexico when we send them back.
Can you give us a sense of the legal status of this now? Is this a completely done deal? Remain in Mexico is in effect until, I guess, Congress does something different, or are there more court angles to be wrangled here?
So this is interesting, right? So this is not a completely done deal. The issue has been decided by the lower court, but has not gone through the full appeals process. We're just really talking about the injunction that, you know, what is going to happen while the case is proceeding. And what the lower court decided is that they would cancel and not allow this policy to be rescinded. And the Supreme Court agreed, allowing that injunction to remain in place and refusing to stay it.
There have been a lot of questions about what the impact of Trump administration appointees on the Supreme Court were going to be, and looking at each individual decision, trying to read what it might mean for the future. On immigration law in particular, what do you see from this relatively new makeup of the court on this and related rulings?
Yeah, so it's not just the makeup of the court. It seems to be their response to the new presidential administration as well. Interesting enough, when there were a lot of challenges against Trump administration policies with regard to immigration, the Supreme Court actually overturned a lot of injunctions, essentially allowing those policies to go forward. And in fact, a lot of justices were concerned about injunctions being issued by lower courts, and again, disturbing the presidential discretion to set policy. This decision shows that they're not necessarily sticking to their principles when it comes to a new presidential administration. The justices that were concerned about nationwide injunctions didn't seem to be at all concerned with this one. And all the concerns that they have said about presidential administrations having the discretion as a policy didn't seem to keep them from essentially keeping this injunction in place. And it should be noted, this is not the only thing that the Biden administration is dealing with. Just in the past month alone, a Texas judge also struck down Biden's effort to prioritize certain deportations over others. And there's also another decision that came out just last month saying that DACA is unlawful. And those are all actually heading up to the Supreme Court to determine in some ways whether or not those injunctions would go into effect, although those judges stayed it for at least a few weeks. So we might see two other decisions from the Supreme Court very soon.
Staying with immigration-related issues in the courts, we're bringing in some refugees from Afghanistan under special immigrant visas, expected to be more people seeking refuge from the country during the Taliban takeover. Do you have thoughts on refugee law in particular?
Yeah, I think this is going to be another thorny issue, and it's going to return to some of the things that we saw following the end of the Vietnam War. So right now we're dealing with the special immigration visas, and that's going to be a big wave with the airlift. But even after that, we're probably going to deal with individuals who arrive into the United States seeking asylum, in part because of persecution and our sort of engagement in Afghanistan. And after that, we might even face individuals who are in persistent refugee camps, right? If they decide to flee Afghanistan and then are in those camps for many of a number of years, we may feel obligated to take them in as refugees. This is what happened after Vietnam. We had decades of essentially dealing with these immigration issues. Of course, the circumstances have changed a little bit. The Republicans were strongly in support of the Vietnamese refugee at that time. Republican administration feels different about immigration now, even with regard to this set, though they are divided. So this is going to be a persistent issue. And certainly, the way we're seeing it now, we need a political solution. Relying on presidents and courts to deal with this seems to be highly problematic and is contributing to a lot of whiplash in our immigration policy.
We're talking to University of North Carolina law professor Rick Hsu about immigration law and rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court and how the judiciary changed under President Trump. Three appointments to the Supreme Court, and that's not all. What effects that's having now and possibly in the future? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Looking at various immigration policies, lots of presidential executive action, and then lots of court reaction. Do you think that's how we should be handling immigration policy, or do you want Congress to come up with some solutions? And big picture, what do you think of the impact of three U.S. Supreme Court appointments under the Trump administration? Are there issues you're watching for in the future that you think rulings might change the way things work in the United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Rick Hsu, professor of law at the University of North Carolina, talking about a Supreme Court decision this week that effectively forces the Biden administration to reinstate a Trump-era policy of keeping asylum seekers in Mexico while their applications are being processed. We're also taking a broader look at the influence of former President Trump's Supreme Court appointments. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rick, people talk, I think, a lot about the influence of the court, the power of the court, how often it weighs in on big issues. But with an issue like immigration, where so much of it's being done by executive orders and Congress isn't doing anything, is that kind of inherently leaving openings where the court has to get involved because Congress isn't doing its job?
Yeah, it's interesting. It certainly is leaving the openings for the court to get involved. But in the past, the court has actually been, especially in immigration, quite reserved. Even the standards that the court applied in this particular case admittedly says that there should be substantial deference to the president to set policy, especially when it comes to immigration. And traditional immigration law is that the courts should defer to political judgments because they are not in the political realm. So the fact that there is an opening, but the courts seem to be jumping right into it, is a little bit of a new development. It seems to represent a shift in the activism, if you will, of the courts these days.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Stephen is with us in La Crosse. Stephen, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm harping on the stay in Mexico policy. I think it's an appalling policy. And I wondered, what's the justification? How is it consistent with either international asylum laws or the asylum laws that our country has agreed to in the past? Thank you for taking my call.
Stephen, thanks. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, there is a strong argument. Even when the Trump administration first implemented it, and there was litigation, including a lower court that said that it was unlawful, essentially saying that it's not only unlawful under a sort of domestic law, but domestic law in connection with our international obligations. Remember, these people are applying for refugee asylum status, so they're claiming that they are sort of seeking protection for persecution. And it is our obligation to not return someone into a situation in which they may be subject to harm. Though it seems to be that is what is happening right now. So that actually was one of the justifications that the Biden administration gave. And now the funny thing is, what the lower court held and the Supreme Court also seemed to have upheld as well, was that the decision to rescind this policy was arbitrary and capricious. Like I said, the court is not in a position to question the policy. It's only a problem if it's completely arbitrary and capricious. And interestingly enough, that's what the lower court found, satisfying that really high bar.
Stephen, thanks for that call. We'll go to Charlie in Door County now. Charlie, hello.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of jumping in on this. I jumped in the car to run to the grocery store, and it came up. And this is always something that intrigues me. Early on in the Trump administration, the Republican Party, as you know, controlled both the House of Representatives and the Senate, and, of course, had the White House. And had they the political will at the time to pass solid immigration reform, the Congress could have gotten it done. But I don't know if that was in their interest to do it, because immigration is one of those hot-button issues that rallies the base on both sides, and it's kind of a rallying point, and there just doesn't seem to be a will to fix it. Well, I have a question. When was the last time that we passed an immigration policy in this country?
Charlie, thanks for the call, and happy shopping. That second, that last point, Rick, that question, it's been a while.
It has been a while. I would say the last comprehensive large-scale immigration reform was 1996. And of course, we had another one following 9/11, much smaller. And we've had a few amendments here and there, but we have not addressed this issue broadly. Think about the DACA issue, right? That has been persistent with regard to Dreamers for a very long time. And I think the caller's right. I mean, one of the reasons why DACA has not been addressed and is still hanging around is in some ways the Republican Party and a lot of people are actually quite divided on it. There is a strong anti-immigrant stance. On the other hand, Dreamers are very sympathetic and they poll really well. Though it's interesting that, you know, it seems like from polling, most Americans, for example, support some sort of pathway to citizenship for Dreamers, but Congress is not acting on it and has not acted on it. And I think what's going on now is it's all on the president and now increasingly on the courts. And this is actually a very dangerous way to set policy, I think, in this particular circumstance.
Thanks a lot for that call. Just in our last minute or so, Rick, bigger picture, new look to the court. Everybody, I think, is reading individual issues to say, oh, yes, it's way more conservative. Oh, no, wait, they're surprising people some. What issues are you watching for in the next couple of years with this court?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are big topic issues with regard to Roe v. Wade, the Second Amendment. But I think the one thing that we should be paying attention to is the degree to which this court might be striking down statutes, not just presidential executive decisions. And I think what's interesting here is even when we had a conservative court before, you had institutionalists like Chief Justice Roberts that was sort of still trying to maintain a more deferential view, you know, sort of position of the court. But now that there's a 6-3 majority and they don't actually need Chief Justice Roberts, I think the court is much more emboldened to take really radical steps to limit congressional and legislative power in addition to presidential power. And I think that's what we should be looking for as well.
Rick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Rick Hsu, professor of law at the University of North Carolina School of Law. We talked to him today about changes in the landscape of the federal judiciary, the Supreme Court from the Trump administration, and their latest rulings on immigration issues.